are from one of our most beloved citizens, actor, scholar, James Earl Jones, who is often described as one of America's most distinguished and versatile actors, one of the greatest actors in American history, which underlies why passing gun legislation and making the cause for gun violence is so difficult. Because America clings to its guns like it clings to the flag. And guns are not a weapon until a tragedy hits home for most people. More than most, the African-American community is far too familiar with the crackle of gunfire in the middle of the day, and our youth far too desensitized to violence and death. But rarely, rarely do we ever talk about those who survive. And my guest tonight, Mark Young, did just that. I recently had the opportunity to listen to a series called Young Survivors that my guests tonight are a part of and that Mark is going to play a little of. Huh? It's not loading? We'll get to it after the break. But in other news, I'll start with, I won't say that Moonlight was shut out, but Moonlight was kind of shut out. Mahershala Ali did win, but I can't be mad because Hidden Figures won for Best Ensemble Cast at the SAG Awards tonight. So I missed a lot of that, but most of you all, like me, were glued to the various news outlets this week with the tragic story of our new Trumptonian. I'm trying to come up with something that would, you know, make this make some semblance of sense in my life. Trump Nation. Because it's a whole nother world. This is a whole nother thing that we're dealing with. We'll talk about that and other things tonight. Mr. Mark Young, how are you?
Good.
That's good. So I'm learning. Okay, so I'm learning how to, like, run. Is that me? Is this someone that does not realize that I'm on the radio at 11 o'clock at night every Sunday? It's the only time I hope my phone does not ring. Anyway. So I'm learning the other side of the board, the business now. So I put all the music in tonight, and apparently, I'm going to come over there in a minute. Anyway, all right, well, I'd like to introduce my, first guest, is Sammy Mack. Welcome to Hot Talk.
Thank you so much for having me.
And, your interview did precede you, and so did your, well, actually, I should tell you that there's Sammy plus one tonight.
Yeah,
congratulations.
Thank you.
Let's
I'm just shy of 9 months pregnant. If you could see me right now, you would see the giant basketball that I'm carrying.
It's awesome. So you are 9 months. It's any minute now. It could be right here.
Let's hope not, but we're prepared in the event that it is.
We will name her or him Jill Tracy.
There you go.
Well, welcome to Hot Talk. Sammy covers healthcare policy for WLRN. Her healthcare journalism is supported by a fellowship with the Kaiser Health News and NPR Healthcare Reporting in the States Project. You know what? First of all, congratulations. Secondly, you know, commercial radio and public radio are so incredibly different. So your programming, when I read that, I thought, okay, so how does that work? Because on our side, that would be, well, I guess an endorsement or a sponsorship. But on the public side...
Yeah, so the way this works is we in public radio, unlike you guys, don't have advertising. We have underwriting, so somebody can sponsor a show, and there's like really strict rules about what they can say and how they do it and stuff like that. But a lot of what we do is grant-based, and the trade-off for that is we also are supported by listeners. So we actually have call-outs if you've ever heard any of our pledge drives.
Exactly. Well, hopefully I'll do one. I always wanted to do one and sit on the little dais and take calls.
Should come.
I would love to come.
It's
I would listen
affirming.
Because you know, if not for public television, I think we would just all be in some sort of reality hell. Do you know what I'm saying? You have to have a break every now and then. You know, I have to get a little All Things Considered in, like at least once or twice a week.
And Nadezh and I both listen to commercial radio when we're in our cars.
Exactly. You know, I love the fact that we're together. This is like, you know,
we should do this again.
We should definitely do this again. When I got the email, I was like, oh my god, that is so cool! I cannot wait to have them. And my next guest is Nadezh Green. We probably know 90% of the same people, and we've been in the same business in this town but I'm so glad to have you. Nadezh covers social justice issues for LRN. In 2016, she was recognized by NABJ, which is the National Association of Black Journalists, with 3 first place awards for investigative reporting, long form and short form radio reporting on policing in Miami-Dade's black communities. So now tell me about that series.
It was an unintentional series. It wasn't meant to be a series, but it just turned out that was a particular year where there were a lot of issues happening around policing. So that was the year Laval Hall was killed in Miami Gardens. That was the year that North Miami Beach police were shooting at mugshots of black men. So it just turned out that I just had a lot of policing stories out of black communities or that affected predominantly black communities.
And that's sort of been your beat. For the most part, in radio. But now you started the Herald.
Yeah, I started the Herald, and I covered city government for the Herald. I was a government reporter.
So did you cover Opa-locka?
I did not.
Okay. Moving on.
No, I covered City of Miami, Miami Gardens, North Miami.
What did you think about Jimenez being like the first one to throw his hand up? President, those of you who may have missed it. Okay, so Donald Trump, can you explain it? Donald Trump has now said that sanctuary cities will not receive funding from the federal government. And sanctuary cities are basically considered people who do who don't throw people in jail just because they're from another country. I mean, really, honestly, you know, when you think about it, okay, so... So he signed another executive order. What is he up to, 15 now? And said that, and so Jimenez here in Miami was the first mayor to raise his hand and say, yes, okay, we will turn all of our criminals into the feds the moment that we arrest them.
He said that he'd comply, that they would comply. It's interesting because this being Miami, that did not go over very well.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of pushback, including from City of Miami Mayor, who was like, because people on social media have been confusing Tomas Regalado's mayor of City of Miami with Jimenez. Mm-hmm. So he has been responding to people saying, wait, hold up, I'm not
That's
him.
Not me.
And also, I don't think we're doing the right thing here. And I think there have been some pushback locally from activists, from other politicians who are like, wait, time out, slow down just a little bit. Let's just see what all this means before. But, you know, he's made his statement and it's out there.
So what are your thoughts really about this? There's just like this little nervous energy in me, like at all times now, that I can't believe that this has happened.
Which part?
That Donald Trump was elected. That America, that as a whole we believed it. That he won by, you know, he lost by 2 to 3 million popular votes. And that those who, you know, said that the Electoral College, it was a sham, like it's kind of hard to dissuade that now. I mean, it's just like everything, I'll tell you what, on November 9th, I thought everything I believe that's right, I've been taught that's right about the world, just crashed. It just was like throw it in the garbage because it's a new world order. Sammy?
The first week has been, for people who cover government, for people who cover D.C., has been like drinking from a fire hose. There is so much.
That is so good.
There is so much change. And so many executive orders coming and so much happening that is unlike anything that that reporters who cover this stuff have mm-hmm. dealt with before. It's going to be interesting to watch. And there are a lot of news agencies that are doubling down on the number of people who are covering this stuff and who are looking into this stuff. So it's also going to change the way this gets covered.
Well, you know what is... The one good thing is I remember last year doing a story that the worst job to have in America was a journalist and the lowest paid. And now we're in vogue again. So
I don't know about that.
Well, I think that the demand for, you know, journalism to push back is higher than ever. And I don't think that. Can you pull that off? Did you take it? Oh, okay. Okay, very good. I think the demand for our services is higher than ever. But how do we relate ourselves? I'm waiting for your audio to come up. How do we relate ourselves to alternative truths?
I don't even know what that is, but I think our role as journalists is still that role, right? That you are supposed to look out for the public, that you are supposed to hold government accountable, and that you present truths, and that we have impact. And that's what you have to continue to do in light of and despite all of the other things happening. I mean, right now you have so many people who just don't trust the media, who think real news is fake news, who think fake news is real news. And so you just have to keep plugging away and making a difference and in telling local stories, not just national stories, but what are the things happening to us here? Because I don't think people put enough interest in local government and the things that the mayor of Miami-Dade County does or the city of Miami mayor does or the mayor of Miami Gardens does will impact you a lot more and immediately than what the federal government does.
So how do we make it sexy? Because that's what's missing. You know, this is the constant dilemma because...
It's not sexy.
Exactly. This is not sexy stuff, but we are at a point, don't you agree, that everybody has got to be paying attention. You can't be asleep right now.
I'll say this. The way that Nadej and I approach some of these stories, including the series that we just told, is that you can't interview a policy, right? Like, you can't interview a decision. You got to find the people.
Mm-hmm.
And the people are the people who are going to be affected by it, who are far downstream of where the decisions get made. The people are the people who are making the decisions, the people who are going to win off of the decisions, lose off of the decisions, the people who are going to profit from this, the people who are going to be harmed by this.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, all politics is local, right?
So
I think our responsibility is to remember that at the end of every single one of these decisions is people.
Yeah, well, thank God somebody does. Because clearly, I mean, I have that feeling. I think one of the, you know, the greatest nightmares has always been for me that a corporation would run the government. Because there's no, you know, God forgive me and God bless them all. There is just not a level of morality in corporations that I think can deal with the humanity of the world. They just don't. The two don't dance together.
The other expression in journalism is follow the money.
There you go. As always. So now let's talk about your series, Young Survivors. And it is certainly one of the first, when Tom wrote, I sent the email, I thought about that. And then when I listened to the pieces, I have to tell you, several of them had me just a ball of tears. I cried through the help. I cried all through the help. So there you go. But we really never talk about not only the survivors, but the youth survivors, these young kids that are surviving gun violence and the tragedy that continues throughout their lives. So how did you get the idea to do the story?
So I think part of it is that we were actually covering quite a few stories in the past 2 years of gun violence, and most of them ended in death. right? So, you know, Jada Page, King Carter, Juwan Coles, a.k.a. Popcorn, like all of these kids were dying. And we were, and I was following those stories and going back to the family members and doing these stories of just perspectives of family members who are impacted by gun violence. And so Sammy and I sat down over lunch and we were just talking about this and we're like, we should try to get a handle. Like, what are the numbers? Like, what do we know? And Sammy was able to get numbers from Jackson, and come to find out, when we look at their numbers, most of the kids who do make it to Jackson's trauma center, Jackson Memorial Hospital's trauma center, survive. And so we were like, the story isn't just that the kids die, but the story is also most of these kids live, and we weren't talking about them. And so that was the entry point into this series, Young Survivors, The Unspoken Trauma of Gun Violence, was to go out and talk to some of these kids who survived and just ask them, how are you doing?
And what would you, what was the most surprising thing to you about some of the kids that you spoke to?
I think one of the most surprising ones for me is a young lady. Her name is LaKayla Limas. She's 19 years old. She's a student at FIU. She was never shot, right? So surviving gun violence isn't just being a direct victim, like you got hit. But it also means surviving your friends who get killed by gun violence, or, you know, just surviving bullets flying in your neighborhood, even though you were never hit. So when we had our interview and I sat down and talked to her, it was striking to me just to see how it impacted her. Four of her friends had died in her last 2 years of high school. And she was not okay how she handled that. And she said it. She was like, it was literally tearing me apart. She would go in her room and talk to her friends who were no longer here. And just, it felt almost like she was carrying the ghost of her friends with her through high school, knowing that today they were here with me, and tomorrow that same kid who I laughed and smiled with in the hallways is no longer here. And I think anyone who's lost a loved one, you know, knows that impact of what it feels like to, you know, that sudden death. But now consider it being a 16-year-old who was killed.
Right. At the hand of probably someone that they know. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back on the other side. 888-550-9105, if you want to give us a call. I am with Nadege Green and with Sammy Mack, plus one, tonight on Hot Talk. Youth survivors of gun violence. We'll talk about it on the other side.
Hot Talk will be right back on Hot 105. For 12 years, on every March on your calendar since, the best in R&B on one stage in the beautiful city of Miami Gardens with their aura and presence. 2017 is here, and it's getting ready to happen again. Are you ready? Hot 105, today's R&B and Old School, presents the 2017 Jazz in the Gardens Music Festival on March 18th and 19th at the Hard Rock Stadium with R&B superstars, legends, and icons Jill Scott,
LL Cool J,
Robin Thicke, Morris Day and the Time, Common, The Roots, Audra Day, Mohin Orful, and finally, from the 305, Miss B, Betty Wright, will be making her Jazz in the Gardens debut. Listen to win your tickets all this week from the only station in South Florida with the most free tickets exclusively. Period. Brought to you by the City of Miami Gardens and today's R&B and Old School. For more info and chances to win, go to Hot105FM.com or our free Hot105 app now.
Quitting tobacco isn't easy. In all honesty, it's a very hard thing to do. The good news is, Tobacco Free Florida is here to help you quit your way by offering the free support and tools you'll need to succeed. For the do-it-yourselfers, there's WebQuit, a free online resource that gives you access to tools, tips, and support to help you quit tobacco at your own pace. Just log on to tobaccofreeflorida.com and see how you can start your plan. You may also qualify for free nicotine patches or gum. It doesn't matter how many times you've tried to quit, now is your time to succeed. Along with WebQuit, we offer a series of additional proven tools to help you quit your way, such as GroupQuit and PhoneQuit. So double your chances of success by calling 1-877-YOU-CAN-NOW or connecting to WebQuit at tobaccofreeflorida.com. Ask about free nicotine replacement options to help you quit. This is your start to a tobacco-free life. No judgments, just help.
Hi, this is Simone Biles. Some of my favorite moves are the double twist, the flip, and of course, the Biles. But my favorite move is nailing a perfect landing right between my amazing parents who adopted me. There are 400,000 foster kids in the U.S. By supporting Mattress Firm's foster kids program, you can give them the little things that make a big difference.
You can help foster kids by supporting Mattress Firm's Foster Kids, a program of the Ticket to Dream Foundation. Right now, Mattress Firm is opening its doors and its heart to collect pajamas so foster kids can sleep a little cozier every night. So join Mattress Firm and Simone Biles in helping foster kids in your local community. To learn more or donate, visit mattressfirmfosterkids.org.
Come to any Mattress Firm today and donate pajamas to help a foster child in your community. Not everyone can be a foster parent, but anyone can help a foster child.
Tom Joyner in the morning, the Tom Joyner Morning Show, and everybody knows it's on 105.1.
Who wants McDonald's secret sauce? A lot of people,
I
guess.
A lot of people.
So McDonald's has a promotion celebrating the introduction of the Mac Jr. And the Grand Mac.
And the Grand Mac, yes.
The Grand Mac. What is this Grand Mac that we talking about?
It's bigger than the Big Mac.
Oh, my God. I don't even eat McDonald's no more, but you're going to make me make a U-turn in there just to see what it looked like.
Now LaVell's getting naked.
And we're back Monday morning, 6 to 10 a.m. with the best music information and what's happening in our community.
Hot 105, Miami, 105.1, Hot 105, 2 days R&B in old school.
My first death that I experienced, it was in 11th grade. His name was Lamont. And he was 18 at the time. He was riding on a bike, and they killed him right off his bike. It was crazy how I found out. I was in class in early childhood education. I'll never forget. And we were on break, so I was scrolling on social media, and I kept seeing everybody rest in peace to Lamont. I couldn't even focus. All I could think about was crying. My teacher was just like, "It's okay, it's okay." 2015. His name was Kenny. Kenny was 19. Him and a guy got in an altercation, and the guy lost the fight and then came back and retaliated and shot him. Another neighborhood childhood friend, his name was Cedric Roll. He was approximately 16, I believe. 16. My sister was around the neighborhood at the time. I think I was at school or something like that. She heard shots. She didn't think anything of it, to be honest. That's pretty much a norm. You just know when you hear shots, don't go to it. Just duck and lay low. And she said when she walked outside after the shots were done, Cedric on the floor, and Cedric, she said it was just blood just coming. Just, oh, lots and lots of blood just leaving his body. He just got in high school. He was in high school. And I used to see him around Northwestern, and I would just smile. And he would just smile at me. And I would just laugh. The halls got colder. Days seemed longer, you know? The more people just kept leaving. That just kept happening back to back to back to back for me. And meanwhile, I'm trying to focus in school. I'm trying to make sure my grades stay good. But I played it well. I smiled. I acted like nothing was wrong with me. At school, like, they have therapists, people for you to talk to. You know, I wasn't ready to just open up to people. Like, a stranger, to be honest. You know, I kind of regret that today because, like, having it all build up. So every death hadn't been processed, and it just kept building, kept coming. More deaths kept coming, and I just kept piling it. I mean, I feel like, you know, I wish, like, somebody in my life would have just pushed me to go really talk about it. Because the way that I was dealing with it, it literally tore me apart. People don't really understand. Like, the people who left behind really get messed up, you know, emotionally, mentally. You know, they say it gets better with time. I mean, you still think about it every day. It doesn't hit you. You don't process it. You just still have a thought back in your head like, no, they're going to come back tomorrow. They're going to be here. I would just be in my room alone. I would lock my door. I would pray, and I would talk to my friends, the one who passed. I would just speak to them, knowing that they can't speak back to me. But as long as they hear that, like, I love them, they were loved here. It made me work harder, I could say, because I was like, most of them didn't get a chance to walk across the stage, didn't get the chance to graduate high school, give their mother that satisfaction, you know. On that day of graduation, it was me and them.
To join Hot Talk, call 888-550-9105. And now, back to Hot Talk.
Yes, indeed. Thank you so much. Welcome back to Hot Talk. Never miss an episode with the Hot 105 app. You can download it now for Android and iPhone. Next week on Hot Talk, it's all about art, and the good folks from Muse 305 and the Hampton House will be in the studio next Sunday. We kick off Black History Month. And tonight, Hot Talk After Midnight, we're reexamining the phrase itself, fall in love, which, you know, implies that something happens by accident. But these days, many of us are looking for love with intent and a long list to go with it. So, sex therapist Jen is back in town, and she'll be in the studio with us. But my guest right now tonight, I'm hoping you all will stay for the next segment.
I am so up past my bedtime right now, but I'll see what I can do. No promises.
Both of my guests tonight, Nadej Green and Sammy Mack from WLRN, they are part of a moving series called Young Survivors, The Unspoken Trauma of Gun Violence, which airs on WLRN February the 3rd. So you can check it out also at WLRN.org/Young Survivors. When they both came in the studio, they were like, yeah, this is way beyond any part of my bedtime. I wish I could say the same. And it does kind of just throw your whole circadian rhythm off when you, you know, try. Because I'm also on it from 10 to noon in the morning. So, yeah, it just, this day then takes 3 days to recover from.
But you know what? We're glad to be here. So thank you for having us. We'll stay up for this.
Thank you. I'm so glad that you came. And the piece that you just heard from the series is one of Nadej's pieces. And the young lady's name, I don't want to mispronounce it.
LaKayla
is what we were talking about before the break, if you were with us. And if you're just joining us, LaKayla was her last 2 years of Miami Northwestern High School. Several of her friends were shot and killed in separate incidents outside of the school. She's now 19, a student at FIU, and she talked to Nadej about how she's handling those losses. And so is it sort of like a post-traumatic stress disorder for her in the way that she doesn't feel that way.
It sounds like it, but yeah. She doesn't have like any kind of official diagnoses because she hasn't gone to see anyone.
Got it. Yeah.
You know, she doesn't go to counseling or therapy. You know, she says she might avail herself, like she might start going now that she's in college. I think therapy tends to be free or very cheap for students in schools, but she hasn't gone to anyone yet. She can just speak about her lived experiences, and she recognizes internally that, you know, perhaps I should have seen someone, or, you know, maybe I should have seen a counselor at school. But part of it is that she never felt comfortable or didn't feel she had permission to do so.
Yeah.
Because at, you know, 16, 17 years old, you don't think, you know, let me get counseling.
Well, you know, and at 25, 30, 45, 50.
Right.
I reference it a lot. There was a study done by the Black Women's Health Initiative out of D.C., and they talked about how the average Black woman walks around with the stress level of a white woman in a mental institution. This is an average. Now, and when I listened to that piece for the first time, I thought, and she's 16. She has experienced things at 16 I will, God willing, never know.
Right.
And at no point, you know, to this point, was she able to say to anybody, you know, a professional that could help her work the things that she has to be dealing with out.
Right.
And this is one of the common threads that we found when we started asking about what is the experience of these kids who survive and the communities and networks around them, around the survivors. There is very, very little research about what the long-term mental health impacts are on kids who survive gunshot wounds, let alone their friends, their families, their schools, their communities. And what there is, what evidence there is, shows that these kids are at a greater risk of anxiety, depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, you know, even suicide, yeah.
And health problems just in general, as they, you know, as they get on later in life. Sammy spoke with Dr. Joan Muir, a clinical psychologist at the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine. Many of her former patients live in Miami neighborhoods hard hit by gun violence. We cue that up. So what did you learn from that experience talking to her?
Well, she talked about just, you know, anecdotally from the many patients that she has seen, the kinds of effects that they feel and the kinds of things that they talk about. And she compared what some of these kids go through to what you would hear from a soldier coming back from war who had experienced something that left them with post-traumatic stress disorder. And one of the examples that she gives is the sound of fireworks, which we heard from other people that we interviewed.
Yeah. We'll play a clip from Sammy's interview.
When children and teenagers survive gun violence, what can that do to their mental health?
They have symptoms that look very much like combat veterans. There is a re-experiencing of the traumatic event. So mentally, they're re-experiencing what occurred over and over again, and sometimes at inopportune times, like when they're in school. Or the classic statement that many combat veterans will make, as well as children, the 4th of July. When you hear firecrackers exploding, you're thinking, who got shot? The re-experiencing of the trauma is something that without treatment is not going to go away.
How common is it for survivors of gun violence and the people who live around gun violence to experience that kind of trauma and stress?
I think that it is far more common than we're comfortable with. They themselves are not aware of it. You see it years later in decreased lifespan, meaning they didn't get killed by gun violence, but they have severe health issues.
Yeah, and that, well, you know, that's what stress will do to you. Stress will start to, it's like a cancer that eats in on you. So what, does she still see many of her patients long term?
She has relationships with them where she'll like drop in, but at this point she's actually running a program that trains groups to do this kind of work in settings sort of across the city. I think they have three or four sites that they do this in, and they actually train people to counsel. And the organization as a whole, I think, sees something like 2,000 families a week, I think she said.
You know, and I thought that number was wrong, that the 2,000 families, you know, and the cycle continues. Because who can possibly be seeing that many people and be able to really, like, be present and focused on each one?
And they do have a lot of workers, but, you know, there's always demand for more. And that was one of the things that we found, is partially because no one is really tracking what happens to these kids. There's no registry. There's no, you know, anything that you sign up for and say, hey, I'm a survivor, sign me up for all of these services. There's nothing like that. And so as a result, you have this kind of like patchwork network of support systems. And if you can find the right one, it's great, but good luck getting a kid to the right one.
Yeah. Yeah, 888-550-9105. You can give us a call, particularly if you know of any. I think, you know, this your series definitely opens a door that I think a lot of people didn't even realize was there in the assistance, because we do so much focus on just the loss and not the rebuilding of the lives of these children afterwards. There is one in the series about the young athlete that's in a wheelchair.
Aaron Willis.
Oh, my. Just, I used that one in a clip from that in the promo. And his story just was really, really touching, in that he was the great hope of the family. And he was shot. Well, I'll let you. Well, who that? Whose story was that?
We interviewed him together.
Yeah. So okay. So I'll let you all tell the story.
Go for it, Nadesh.
So Aaron Willis was actually a student at Booker T. Washington High School. He was a freshman when he was shot. He was riding his bicycle in Wynwood. bullets started flying. He ended up getting shot, goes to the hospital, and finds out almost immediately or the day after that he was paralyzed, and he was a football player. Aaron got, a lot of people in the community know of Aaron's story because all of the media outlets have covered it. And on graduation day last year, he walked across the stage using robotic legs
from the University of Miami.
That was the only thing I knew of the story.
So, you know, he walked across the stage wearing robotic legs and then, you know, went back in his wheelchair. Those were borrowed legs for a day, essentially.
Wow.
Aaron.
They went back.
They're experimental They're part of a program at the Miami Center to, or Miami Project to Cure Paralysis. And so they're not something that you can actually have. Like, they're still.
Right. They're not on the market.
Right.
Right.
Probably, or they would probably not be something he would ever be able to afford either.
It's very expensive.
Yeah. For now, they're hoping to get it to a point where it'll be more accessible, but that is years down the road.
Yeah.
But Aaron talked about just going to these dark places. You know, he had like moments of levity and happiness, of course. You know, girls still liked him even though he was in a wheelchair. And, you know, he was a kid and still a kid. But he also had so many moments of just dark depression to the point where his family actually reached out to UM and got him a psychologist because he would stop eating, he would stop showering, because he would look at his trophies and he would look at his friends and see that he's in a wheelchair and he's not okay.
Yeah.
And
part of what's really interesting about Aaron and his family is they have been so open and public about the physical injuries. And you can see the physical injuries. But when we started talking to them about the trauma, both with Aaron individually and kind of to the family in general, it was like they were just waiting for somebody to ask, how are you doing? Which is one of the things that we heard again and again with the survivors who were willing to talk to us. And of course, you know, we met people who were gunshot wound survivors as kids and teenagers who just were not ready to talk about it. But the ones who were, that was a common thing that we heard was that, you know, nobody really asks about that part of it.
And I think with Aaron especially, because he has a really strong support network, his family, his friends, public officials. I mean, he has a really strong support network. But even with that support network, he still faces all of these challenges, the mental health challenges. And so it begs the question, what about the kids who don't necessarily have all that support but are still going through this as well?
Yeah, the story that that he told about being in class, the story about he and his father. I'll let him tell you.
The doctor came to me with my X-rays and they said most likely you'll be in a chair forever. Your chances of walking are very slim. Well, he didn't really say that was slim. He said they was non-existent. So, yeah, at that point, I was just like, well, why I had to get shot, you know?
Yeah, it's and he, in many points, wanted to kill himself.
At one particular point, this past November, the day before Thanksgiving, Aaron tried to commit suicide. And he ended up going to his dad and telling his dad what he did. He'd taken a bunch of pills, and the reason why is just he didn't want to be in a wheelchair anymore. And his dad, Sammy, also a Sammy, told him, like, you know, if you want to die, I don't want you dying out here in these streets. I don't want you trying to commit suicide underneath a bridge. So you know, I want you to die in my arms. If you want to do this, then you're going to do it in my arms. And he climbed into bed with his dad. And his mom had the phone ready to call 911, but they were like, this is your choice. And Aaron, like, started feeling pain, and he started throwing up, and he was like, okay, you guys can go ahead and call the paramedics. And he was rushed to Jackson again, and now he's back on his depression medication.
Yeah, and, you know, this is 4 years after he had been shot. Right. And he is someone who knows that around the anniversary of his shooting, which this was close to, it's a trigger for episodes like this. And and again, you know, he is somebody who has a lot of really great support. And even with all of that support, this hard. There were more than 850 kids who went to the Rider Trauma Center in the past decade. 90% of them or so survived. That's a small school.
Yeah.
of kids.
And to be clear, this is just a snapshot of what we're able to get, because there are many kids who don't go to Jackson, right? Because if it's not, you know, the most traumatic gunshot wound, if it's just like a through and through or something like that, they may have ended up at Kendall. They may have ended up at North Shore or at Aventura. So there are many kids that we just don't know about.
And that's just the 850.
Right, those are just
what
we
Jackson.
Know about at Jackson. This does not encompass kids who've gone to other hospitals.
John on line one. Hi, welcome to Hot Talk.
Hi, Jill. How you doing? You have a nice talk show.
Thank you.
I think gun violence is a very bad thing because it resolves into fighting and killing and everything else like that. And it's to the point that, you know, we shouldn't be killing everybody. We should be getting along with each other. And I agree with everybody on the panel. And I'm sorry for the guy that's in the wheelchair. And
thank you, John. I appreciate it. And next time, you know, bring a cocktail for us. Thanks.
I sure will, just.
Thank you, boo.
I will say, everybody that we talked to, had really strong feelings that ultimately what you want is prevention. You want to stop the violence before it ever happens. That said, there is this group of kids who are here, who have been shot, who have experienced this, who do need support now. So that was one of the other things that came out of this is, you know, for as much as we talk about stopping the violence, putting the guns down, all of that, the people, the doctors, the researchers, the family members, the survivors themselves that we talked to also talked about, and in the meantime, we need a better way of dealing with who is here and who is hurting now.
Yeah, because the they are the walking wounded. Right. Point blank period. And I think that they're right that we do kind of talk around the problem.
We're good at that. And one of our reporters who isn't here with us, but he also worked on this project, Rowan Moore Garrity, he kind of focused on how this exists in the school system. Because a lot of this plays out in schools because you have kids who are school age who get shot. And so what does that mean for a teacher like Tan Mitchell, a teacher at Miami Central, who at the start of every school year, she asks her kids, how many of you have lost someone to gun violence? And nearly every hand goes up every school year. And so what does that look like in a classroom setting where you have a population of kids who have to deal with gun violence, where the RIP t-shirts and RIP buttons are the topic of discussion, but you're trying to get them to learn English and literature?
Yeah.
You know?
And they're like walking in two worlds. And I think about it. I remember, I think senior year, somebody got stabbed. And it was like the world had ended. But when I think about it, that was just the tip of the eye. I mean, I could have never imagined that children would be being shot by each other. In school, there was a story that just like literally burned my soul last year about a young boy who was killed in Miami Gardens, and he was shot over 12 times, and the assailant was like 16. So what did you find out about this, the greater development of this culture of violence? You know, a lot of times we... especially in like talking about Chicago and LA, there is a long-standing culture of gang violence in both Chicago and Los Angeles. There are legacies of that, but that's not the case here.
Right. Miami doesn't have traditional gangs in the sense of like, you know, what you see in Chicago or what you would see in LA. We have more loosely affiliated, like literally you have one block versus the other block, right? Mm. So it's very like clique-ish, yeah. Still considered gangs, but not what you would see in those larger groups, in those states that you just mentioned. But I mean, it's still a problem here. It's still a problem. I think one of the findings we found is that there's a lot we still don't know.
Yeah.
When it comes to trauma in the community and what that means. And there's a lot of trauma. I mean, I spoke with Morris Copeland, the director of juvenile services, and they oversee the juvenile assessment center where kids go when they're arrested. A lot of these shooters have been traumatized and have seen things and have been in situations that at their age they probably shouldn't have been in or even experienced. And so it's this idea of like throwing kids away because they're like they're bad.
Mm-hmm.
But what is going on with that child before they picked up a gun and what needs to exist before they could get to pick up a gun? And all of the institutional folks we did get to speak to talked about that. Like, you can't talk about ending gun violence without ending the societal issues that make gun violence pervasive.
Right.
And so what does the community look like? What does education look like? What does after-school resources look like in these neighborhoods? What do jobs look like for young men who get out of jail, right, and go back into these same neighborhoods, reentry? What does that look like? Because that can contaminate a neighborhood when you have a whole bunch of people who have nothing to do. So all of this, you know, is part of the bigger question that I don't think we answer in this series, but it did come up.
Right.
And one of the things that we did hear that did come up in the series is that you meet these people, these young people who have become numb, who get really aggressive and angry, and that in and of itself is actually a symptom of trauma.
Right.
And so it's, and you know, it's one of those things that's really hard to understand.
Because they haven't even really developed the full range of feelings yet to have so much trauma, to not even know how to even compartmentalize it. So it's just like, you know, I liken it to like a pack of wild dogs just running through your mind, like at all times. And there's no silence.
And some of the kids that we spoke to, one of them, we spent some time a while following this group that tries to intervene with kids who have weapons convictions, mostly with guns convictions. And one of the young men that we spoke with, who has, you know, slowly and sort of dangerously gotten himself out of the gang that he used to run with and mm-hmm. is now working mentoring other kids like him, compared it to being raised like a dog, like a killer.
Wow.
And that those were his words. And now he's at a place where he can look back and see that. But he also talked about being numb. And at one point he said, you know, if somebody had told me that my mom had just died, I would have been like, okay, what's for dinner? And that is how disassociated he was from everything else that was going on around him.
You know what? And when you say that, I got an immediate picture of that kid that shot up the MLK, right, running backwards, shooting. That's where I can imagine that's where he is. Because, you know, we're not talking about, and there's this, you know, the culture that we're in right now with Trump, and this idea, I don't know if it's a Republican idea or not. There's so much to be dissected, but that there's always got to be a villain. There's always got to be someone who hates you and is against you and that you have to fight. James Baldwin, have you seen I'm Not Your Negro Yet?
Not yet.
Amazing. And in it, he does this, throughout it, he does this great interview with David Cabot. And at one point, he's, you know, he talks about what, you know, white people need to do now is basically to figure out why they need the N-word. The fact that I can't say that is a whole nother show. But that why there always has to be a boogeyman. And this was in 1962 or 3, and I'm watching it, right? I'm watching a screener on my computer screen and juxtaposed with watching the confirmation hearings of Donald Trump's obsessions. And I'm like, it's like, right, it's almost too much to deal with. We're kind of in that same space, and it is that, what is that energy about that there always has to be someone who's hunted in this country? That might be a new series. I mean, because when you talk about, And I hear it in both of your voices. There's a level of passion. And there's also a level of now what?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Because it is one of those issues that we know it exists in the community. I don't think anyone will say that, you know, we don't have to deal with gun violence. But I think right before the elections, even, there was a poll that WLRN helped sponsor, as well as other media outlets helped pay for this poll, where mm-hmm. what is the number one issue in Miami-Dade County facing? And in the black community, the number one issue was youth gun violence. In the mm-hmm. white community, it was traffic. And so there is a huge disconnect even within our own communities about what are the issues that are facing us and how urgent those issues are. No one is discounting the fact that traffic is horrendous in Miami, but we're talking about lives here, right? And it disproportionately, in fact, impacts the black community.
Right.
I mean, when you look at where homicides are happening, where a lot of these shootings are happening, they are concentrated in certain neighborhoods throughout the county, from the south to the north, but they are predominantly black neighborhoods.
Yeah. Well, you know, the past month, you know, this saying, and I don't even know, I was reading something and I came across it that said, in the absence of judgment, humanity will appear. Mm-hmm. And it has just resonated so deeply with me, because that is where how do we get to a place of at least less judgment? You know, I mean, we're in such a, like, I can't say it's cool, but we have an administration who is ruling by fear and intimidation. And, you know, then how now then do you, sweet Sammy's plus one, you know?
There's definitely a lot of judgment in kids who get shot in Miami-Dade, too.
Mm-hmm.
And even the kids who die. I mean, someone pointed out to me, when it's the babies who get killed, the 6-year-old elementary school kids, look who shows up for their funerals.
Right.
When it's a 15-year-old, 16-year-old, a 17-year-old who gets killed, look who shows up for their mm-hmm. funerals. Because there's this idea that somehow, if you're over the age of 14 years old and you're a black male, maybe there's something you did. Could have contributed to your death. But when you're 6 years old and when you're 8 years old, you're just so innocent that there's nothing you could have done. So the idea of not being an innocent victim or not being innocent enough to spur the kind of outrage or even the kind of action to deal with this. Because most of the kids we saw in that survivor gap, when you look at 14 and up, those numbers went dramatically up versus under 14
right.
years old.
Right. Yeah.
But who shows up for them?
Who shows up for them? Wow. The series Young Survivors, The Unspoken Trauma of Gun Violence, airs February 3rd on WLRN. You can also find the entire series at WLRN.org. Young Survivors. Nadege and Sammy Mack, thank you so much. And I hope, are you awake?
Thanks.
I'm up. Okay. Yeah, they're up. So on the other side, our dear girlfriend, Jen Smith, our sex therapist, is back in the building. So, you know, you are looking for love. Is it in all the right places? Do you have intention on what you really want to show up? We're going to talk about your expectations and sex expectations for 2017, coming up on the other side. I am Jill Tracy, and this is Hot Talk on Hot 105.
Your views matter to us. Call Hot Talk at 888-550-9105.
Let me take my gazelles off. Don't want this thing, but can't let go.
Hot Talk will be right back on Hot 105.
What should I do for vacation?
Searching. Norwegian Cruise Line has ships sailing all over the world.
Do they sail from around here?
Searching. Norwegian has ships sailing year-round from Miami.
Oh, and they've got that free-at-sea promotion, so I could choose up to 5 free offers. Should I choose free unlimited open bar?
Yes.
Or do I like free specialty dining?
Do fish like water?
Oh, but I could choose free shore excursions.
My camera would like that.
Or free Wi-Fi.
We both know you like that.
Or bring friends and family for free.
Why don't you book a suite or the Haven and get all 5?
You're a genius. I'm free to do what I want.
Norwegian Cruise Line. Feel free. Book now and get 1, 2, or all 5 offers for free, up to $2,800 in value. Visit ncl.com, call your travel professional, or call 1-888-NCL-CRUISE. Ships Registry, Bahamas and USA. Restrictions apply.
Quitting tobacco isn't easy. In all honesty, it's a very hard thing to do. The good news is, Tobacco Free Florida is here to help you quit your way by offering the free support and tools you'll need to succeed. For the do-it-yourselfers, there's WebQuit, a free online resource that gives you access to tools, tips, and support to help you quit tobacco at your own pace. Just log on to tobaccofreeflorida.com and see how you can start your plan. You may also qualify for free nicotine patches or gum. It doesn't matter how many times you've tried to quit, now is your time to succeed. Along with WebQuit, we offer a series of additional proven tools to help you quit your way, such as GroupQuit and PhoneQuit. So double your chances of success by calling 1-877-YOU-CAN-NOW or connecting to WebQuit at tobaccofreeflorida.com. Ask about free nicotine replacement options to help you quit. This is your start to a tobacco-free life. No judgments. Just help.
Hi, I'm Danny Cannell. The Capital One Orange Bowl has been a South Florida tradition for over 80 years. The Orange Bowl will host a playoff semifinal in 2018, 21, and 24. Every ticket purchased enables the Orange Bowl to give back to the South Florida community. Learn more at orangebowl.org.
This is Charlie Murphy, and you're listening to WHQT Coral Gables, Miami's Hot 105.
Cox Media Group Station.
Cox Radio is an equal opportunity employer. In accordance with the FCC's EEO regulations, any organization that distributes information about employment opportunities to job seekers or refers job seekers to employers may request that it be provided notice of Cox Radio job vacancies as they occur. If your organization would like to be notified of such vacancies, please contact Angela Perry or Diana Valenzuela at Cox Media Group, Miami, 2741 North 29th Avenue, Hollywood, Florida, 33020, or at angela.perry@coxinc.com or diana.valenzuela@coxinc.com. Each organization that wishes to be given notice of job vacancies must provide its name, mailing address, email address, telephone number, contact person, and identify the category or categories of vacancies of which it requests notice. An organization may request notice of all vacancies.
Go faster. Go happier. Go bolder. At Universal Orlando Resort, you can go longer, where the fun is bigger, the thrills are better, the laughs are heartier, the experience is stronger, and your heart beats louder. The Wizarding World of Harry Potter, Minions, Transformers, The Incredible Hulk, Spider-Man, King Kong. You can't have a cooler time. Florida residents get up to 3 months free on any annual pass. Plus, you can enjoy low monthly payments using FlexPay after an initial down payment. That means more mayhem, more thrills, and more Universal Orlando Mardi Gras with a parade every night from February 4th through March 25th. Visit UniversalOrlando.com for complete offer details. Offer ends March 29th, 2017. Restrictions apply. Entertainment subject to change without notice.
I say what I want to say when I feel and I look in the mirror and no one there.
To join Hot Talk, call 888-550-9105. And now, back to Hot Talk.
That I know you very well. Your eyes never lie, even if they tell. Sweet lullabies that come with the smell of a dozen roses flipping down a green hill. You living in a world that come with plan B, cause plan A never relay a guarantee, and plan C never could say just what it was. And your plans only can pan around love. You love him, you love them, you love her. You love so much, you love what love hurts. You love red bottom and gold that say queen. You love handbag on the waist of your jean. You love French tip and trip that pay for. You love bank slip that tell you we pay more. You love a good hand when never the car dealt, but what love got to do with it when you don't love yourself?
I know I wonder.
And welcome back to Hot Talk. 888-550-9105. Give us a call. Hanging out. It's after midnight. Thank you so much to Nadej Green and Sammy Mack for coming. You got to check out that series on WLRN. If you're unable to catch it in your car, you can go on their website, which is WLRN.org/young survivors. But it's really good. I mean, it's from so many different angles, from the therapy angle, from the kids themselves, their friends, just from every angle on a topic that we really need to spend more time on.